Can we start this one with Pagan again?
Hey, it's that trouble, man.
Simon,
I think we should.
The audible. Oh, I want Pagan playing right now as I'm speaking. And for some way, somehow, some mysterious technical reason, right now, Pagan is playing.
I'm a true believer, boy, you're nothing, just a pagan. Moving like a pagan, saying no nonsense haters. I'm a true believer, boy, you're nothing, just a pagan.
I've been told by people in the higher ups that we need to now say, please follow us, OC. That's the new word. You got to know the new words and terminology to be caught up with what's happening on the streets, OC.
Yeah, some people don't care, though. They feel like they can do their own thing. Some people feel like they're just gonna do what they want.
I got to show you something, OC. It's in my right back here. You remember these, right?
Let me see. Ooh, yeah, I do remember those. Yeah.
You signed these gloves. These are your official gloves, OC.
Yep, you wore these
in a game. They have your signature. I won't put it up there because I don't want anybody taking this and trying to forge your signature, but it's on here. And my business partner, Pete, sent these to me and said, I asked OC, can he sign this for his cousin, all that. I still got them, OC.
You haven't done what you're supposed to do.
I am sending them back.
He said, I'm just going to keep these.
Now I don't want to give them back. They're in my little memorabilia, and they're sitting here, and they make me happy.
Yeah, I feel you, man. I feel you.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. What else? A lot of things going on making me happy, though, man. A lot of things going on making me happy, Jake. Man. A lot of people getting broke off, man. What's going on out here?
It's the time. It's that time of the year, OC, and one contract that everybody was waiting for, a guy who really played the long game by betting on himself, Dak Prescott of the Dallas Cowboys gets his contract. He gets paid. The total deal is about 4 years, $160 million.
75 million this year. First year.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Did not. Yeah. He gets 75 in the first year. Good job. You don't miss no dollars.
Jason, $75 million in year one.
Yeah. Yeah. That out the gate. highest signing bonus in league history. That's what it is. 66 million. The Dallas Cowboys said and did what they said they were going to do. They said they were going to pay him. They said they wanted to pay him. You on our podcast have told stories about when the Dallas Cowboys pay their players and how much they enjoy it. What do you think about this? I mean, a lot is going to be said about this, especially Dak Prescott's approach to betting on himself.
Yeah, I think obviously Jerry Jones has been a man of his word in regards to that type of stuff and taking care of his players. I think, Steven has kind of pulled him back from that, rightfully so and smart, in almost a smart way, because Jerry has never really cared about paying players, man. He's like, yeah, take the money. Here, I don't care. But now, he wants to win. But Steven has been the guy who's kind of like been like, whoa, hold on now. And he's taking a more disciplined approach to building the football team. And I think what you see here is a player betting on himself and winning. But it's very, very important to understand that this is the rare instance that a player bets on himself like that and wins. And whenever this happens, it is a great thing for players. It's a great thing for the movement, because what he has done is he has created a pathway for people to follow. Kirk Cousins was the first person to actually do it. And Dak Prescott says, okay, I'm a better player than this guy. I'm going to follow this exact same thing. And it played out the same way for him, man. it's a fascinating thing to watch. It's an incredible thing to see a player who is so beloved by so many people within the organization, outside of the organization, does everything the right way, man. This guy is a role model. He is a perfect citizen as far as the quarterback position and the way he carries himself. And to see him get rewarded, it's fantastic for everybody involved.
I agree, man. Everybody has so many good things to say about him as a person. To your point, do you think with his injury last year and how the Cowboys fell off, I mean, it just validated how much he meant to that team, right? I mean, most of the time you bet on yourself, you get injured, it doesn't work out. That's the fear of taking these one-year deals and trying to get to free agency to hit that big deal. But with him not being on the field and the team, I mean, they weren't great, but they were competitive with him.
Yep.
They had a chance, especially offensively. They were the top offense. I will say one thing, OC, and you know this, being drafted high by the Giants, when they pay you, you are their own. You're a part of their family. Like, when you get that second deal with them, remember, somebody in the organization bet on you, said, I want OC. Dak Prescott, I believe, was a fourth rounder. They scouted him. They saw it wasn't an easy pick, right? And for him to develop in what he's done, when Jerry Jones is the GM by default because they don't have one, it's his pick. It makes him look good, and he's rewarding his brilliance, per se.
Mm. Yes, he is. Yes, he is, man. And this brings me to something else, Jason, because when you look at, okay, the times we're in, right? It's a very unique time that we're in right now, right?
Okay. I don't know where you're going, but I might need a sip of water.
Yeah. But, I mean, you think about this, Jason. All the top players in the NFL right now, the highest paid players, which is – because money talks. You understand what I mean? People can say anything they want to say. Blah, 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 blah. People can just talk trash. That's their thing. But money talks. Mm-hmm. And the highest paid players in the NFL are not only quarterbacks. They are black quarterbacks. Think about where the black quarterback started. And think about where the black quarterback is now. Think about where black people started. And think about where black people are now. I cannot even underestimate how monumental this is. Yeah. Because there's all this talk about, racism and all this, but the highest paid players in the NFL are all black people. This is crazy.
But to your point, you talk about the NFL being merit-based, and merit-based, and also your results are immediate. You have to make the best decision for the best result. And you don't have the longevity to kind of wait for that. And what I mean by that is it's in the NFL, it's week to week, right? And for a player, it's day to day. And when you look at NFL franchises and teams as organizations, you could lose your whole labor force by making bad decisions that aren't based upon their success, meaning the wrong player on the field, you know? And so, the NFL conducts its business as far as play on the field is concerned. The best player usually plays and gets rewarded because that helps you in your ultimate goal in a championship.
Excellent. I'm glad you said that, Jason.
You're so close to the camera. I'm nervous.
I'm glad you said that, Jason.
Okay.
Because here's something that we need to discuss. Why does it work like that within the NFL locker room, but it doesn't work like that in the rest of the world? Why? The teams are all owned by white people, right?
Not all of them, but majority.
Well, except for the Jaguars, right? Mm-hmm. And the Buffalo Bills, they have a female owner who's of Asian descent. Mm-hmm. But the rest are owned by white people. So why would it be like that within the NFL locker room or within athletic locker rooms, but it doesn't work like that in the rest of the world? What would the reason behind what would the reason for that be?
Okay, so if I'm thinking of the NFL locker room.
Yeah.
I'm thinking labor unification.
Okay.
What I mean by that is, no matter what you are, where you're from, when you are in that locker room and you're a player and you're on that team, there's a brother sisterhood, right?
Why?
Because we know, because we understand each other, because we get to know each other because of integration of some, for lack of a better word.
So shouldn't the outside world be looking within, like an NFL locker room, to see how things should be functioning?
Yeah, I think the problem is when you talk about progress and you look at a locker room or you look at teams or you look at organizations that have diversification, right? Different voices, different minds. There becomes this theory where people think that diversification is a zero-sum game, meaning the more diversified you get, somebody's losing. And who's losing? And what are they losing? And a lot of times I think the people at the top don't want to be the ones who are stripped of that power, that place in society, and or that financial position. Fear of that is a lot of the reasons why you don't see a lot of diversity in organizations, though it helps. I mean, when people are in more diverse environments, it demands more cognitive abilities because you have to think more. I can look at you and we think alike in so many ways. There's shortcuts in the way we process things. If you add someone else in our environment or a conversation, then I have to be on my toes a little more and make sure I'm aware of what's being said, how it's being said, how it's being filtered. It's kind of why you throw things at me all the time. You keep me guessing, you keep me moving, you keep me fluid. And I think that diversity creates those environments, which is key. And it's why people have success when they have diverse environments.
Let me tell you what I think is happening, Jason. And I'm going to get pushback and I'm going to get thrown off. Let me tell you what I think is happening. I think that within the sports world, right? Mm-hmm. We are so dependent on one another, right? Mm-hmm. And you get within an NFL locker room and it is so merit-based and we all need each other to win. Like, we all need each other to win, right? Yes. And you get within this locker room and the white players don't think they're better than the black players. They don't think that. The white players, as a matter of fact, know they're not better than the black players. And so you have an environment within this locker room of pure mutual respect. Nothing other than that. So what happens is you're in an environment, you're in a bubble, so to speak, where everybody is operating on the same terms. Everything is merit-based. If a guy is in front of you, he's in front of you because he is better than you. If a guy is getting paid more than you, he is getting paid more than you because he is better than you. There were white players who were getting paid more than I was. Defensive ends, Jared Allen. Jared Allen was putting up more numbers than I was. He was a better defensive end than I was. That is the only reason why he was getting paid more money than me. It's not because he was white. Right. I was getting paid more than other players who were white because I was better than they were. Right.
Right. Right.
And this is the way things work within there, because everybody in some form or fashion is on equal terms.
Yes.
What happens is you leave that environment and you look at the outside world, mm-hmm. right? It's not the same out there. It's not. You look at the countries, the African countries, you know, the countries that are predominantly black, right? And you don't see them in the G20. You don't see them with the high, for whatever reason, and there's a myriad of reasons why this is happening, but for whatever reason, you don't see them in these capacities. We're like on the bottom. And so on the outside, we're looked at a certain type of way. And so this, what happens within a locker room or what happens within there doesn't translate to the outside world because we're not equal on the outside world. This is like an issue that I feel like we need to fully understand. Like, and Nelson Mandela said it best. And the reason why this came to my head was I saw an article, not an article, but a quote by Nelson Mandela. And Nelson Mandela said, he was like, listen, until Nigeria gets his act together, Black people will never be respected. I didn't know he said that, but he did. He was like, until Nigeria gets his act together, Black people as a whole will never be respected. And I was like, what did he mean by that? Like, what would make him say something like that? Here you have a country, 200 million people, some of the smartest people in the world, tremendous natural resources, everything necessary to be a world power. If Nigeria was behaving in a fashion like China, right? The way China's behaving on a global, massive military, massive economic, things will be different on the outside for Black. I truly believe this. But because we're not, we're still not looked at the way we're supposed to. And if we had more Black countries in the same mix as a US, a France, a Germany, a China, if you had Black countries in that mix, I think the world would be operating the same way the NFL locker room operates. I believe that. I believe things would be completely merit-based if we as countries were operating the way these other countries operate. I don't know. I may be wrong. It's just a theory, but it's just something I thought.
As a Nigerian, how does that, it feels like listening to you, how it impacts you, and it has some, it feels like emotionally it has a real pull on you. Explain that. Like, you know, because I'm listening to you, I'm hearing you, and it makes sense, but I'm not from Nigeria.
Yeah. I think the problem that I see, and it's not just with Nigeria, it's with majority of the countries in Africa, is we were colonized, and then when they left, the leaders continued with that same colonialism. But now it's just Black people doing it to Black. So they're maintaining the same system with majority of the people living in poverty, and few people are richer than you can even imagine. You understand? So that they're extracting the resources from the country. And this time it's not human resources, they're extracting natural resources. Few people at the top are getting fabulously wealthy, and everybody else reigns poor the exact same way it was when white people were there. It hasn't changed.
Osi, that's happening in America right now. Osi, that is what is exactly going on in the United States. At no time in history has the wealth gap ever been more significant. And the top percent, I mean, the top 1% have extracted that wealth at an alarming rate. I think in the US, politically, they have, the propaganda has fooled people in thinking the working class were poor. Let me tell you who's working class. We were working class. We still are working class, OC. When you work for income, you are working class. You are no longer working class when you can live off of interest of money earned. That's when you are not working class. Now, because of football, some of us can do that and live well.
I was quiet. I was like,
but we are all somewhat working
class
for our lifestyle, right?
Yep.
Income ranges are all different, but this is a problem. What you said and what you're talking about in Nigeria right now is happening in the US, and they are trying to separate us based upon racial issues.
They're so smart. They're so smart, man.
Right?
So smart, man.
It's happened before. When America was built, this is what scared them. When poor working class people got together, it forced change. Let's separate them, let's divide them, and let's divide it based on race. Because you know what? In America, they said, listen, you might be poor, but you're not them.
You're not them. And they held on to that. They still hold on to it.
They still hold on to it. I mean, I'm fascinated by the way people think, because people think and they do things that don't even solve their issues or objectives. Like that happens from letting people think for them and letting people set their agenda. Mm. Back to your point about a locker room, you can't do that. Mm-hmm. You can't divide like that. Every coach throughout history understood, if this locker room's divided, we are done. We can't win a game. We can't win a practice.
You're finished.
Everything you do in sports is you try to keep the locker room together, the people together, common ground. How much time do they spend on trying to get us to understand how alike we are? We spend time mm-hmm. together. We sweat together. We bleed together. We work hard together. All that. Because when you're on the battlefield, that's your brother next to you. That's your sister next to you. There is a bond. So when you think about things and you think about what's going on in the world, understand where the division is, who is trying to create it, and for what purpose.
Mm, for real.
It's usually economics. You know, so it's interesting. So,
love it.
Hopefully there's a shift.
There's another shift going on. Mm-hmm. In player power.
This is a game changer.
Yeah. Now, I'm going to look at it from two perspectives, Jason. Okay. I'm going to look at it from two perspectives.
Okay.
Okay. Obviously, you know about what Russell Wilson is doing, what Deshaun Watson is doing, what they're trying to do. These guys are flexing. Like, they're like, we are the guys, and we are, you know, they're flexing. So, I think from a player standpoint, when I put my player hat on, you know, my mm-hmm. player hat, Jay Bell, when I put my player hat on...
Used to have the hat
on,
white shirt, big chain.
I put my player hat on. I absolutely love what they're doing.
Tell me
why. From a player standpoint. Because they are realizing their authority. They're realizing their power, and they are flexing it. They're like, listen, this is what I want. This is what I deserve. And this is what I'm going to do. You're not going to lie to me. I'm going to leave. I don't like this offensive line. I don't like what you've done. You're not protecting me. I'm going to leave. Now, boom, we've seen people do it. We've seen NBA players do it all the time. We've seen soccer players do it all the time. And now the NFL said, listen, the NFL players are like, listen, it's our time. We got social media presence. You know, we got all the eyes on us right now. We can do this. Yes. Right?
Yes.
From a player standpoint, I've tried to do it. When I was a player, from a player standpoint, it is fantastic. And they need to keep it up. They need to keep pushing from a player standpoint.
Okay. Yes.
Remember I said from a player standpoint.
Let me respond from a player before you go into your other.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Do you credit the NBA?
100%.
Okay.
100%. You have to.
Yes.
You have to. Yes. Because this is their model, right? This is what they do.
They've done that. So I credit the NBA players. The right players were able to see if they had the leverage and the value, they could flex. One thing, though, is very significant in this conversation, and that is the mm-hmm. role of social media. That is the power of Twitter. We've seen it used in positive ways, negative ways. Before, especially when you were flexing, teams controlled the media.
in media. They control the narrative. They control everything.
They control it all. You know, hey, put this story out. Say this. If you want to come back and get this interview from this guy, you better respond to what we are trying to say, our agenda. That no longer takes place because a player, all he has to do is go to Twitter and every other thing anybody else has said is done. It came out of his mouth. When your agent comes out and says, if this was to happen, these are the teams. When you come out and say, I am never going to play for this team again. Or now, if you just remove who you follow, OC.
Yep.
The speculation begins.
Begins.
And all of us in the media, we can follow those leads and figure out exactly what your agenda is. And now you put the ball in the court of the team, the franchise, the owner, whoever, because now you have to make decisions based upon what's the best for your fan base, because it's all about winning games. Continue with your thoughts, my brother.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, Jason. Now, from an NFL standpoint, I'm going to put my NFL hat on now, right? Mm-hmm.
Your owner's hat?
Owner.
Is it a cap or what does it look like?
No, it's a fedora. Yeah, it's a fedora. Yeah, that's what I got to roll with as an owner. Under no circumstances can I allow this to happen.
Because?
Under no circumstances, Jason.
Why is that?
And I'm going to tell you why. And I'm talking about from a whole NFL standpoint. Because if I'm short-sighted as an owner, I say, what do they want for Deshaun? Oh, 3-4 first-round picks? Cool. Boom. Take. Oh, what do they want for Russell? Oh, 2-3. Oh, we get everybody here. Boom. Take. Cool. I do that because these players are fantastic players, right? But what has separated the NFL from all the other leagues? What has made the NFL so special? What has made the NFL the apple of America's eye? It's not, oh, the game is great. Yeah, it's a great game. There's no question about that. But there's something else. You see, right now, as me and you are speaking, right now, there's maybe 22 teams in the NFL right now who think to themselves, we can win the Super Bowl this year. They think that. Mm-hmm. And it's not even a delusion. They really believe that they can win the Super Bowl. And the reason why they think that is because they've seen it happen 50 times, right? The power isn't concentrated in a couple of teams' hands because the players aren't concentrated in a couple of teams' hands. The money isn't concentrated in a couple of teams' hands. Everything is equitable. Everything is spread out, and almost everybody has a chance to win every single year because of the way the system is set up. They have restricted player movements. A guy gets drafted, and they can keep him there with the franchise tag. They can keep him under all circumstances. They keep him there so players, Houston gets Deshaun Watson. They can keep him there for a while. They can build around this guy. And they have restricted the free movement of players with all the little things that they put in place. Now, as unfair as this is for the player, as bad as this is for the player, it is absolutely incredible for the league. It is a great thing for the NFL for a player to have to actually stay in Buffalo or to have to stay in Houston or to have to stay in Green Bay. Who would go play for the Green Bay Packers? You understand what I mean? Like, who would go play for, like...
Hey, Simon almost cut the whole podcast off.
No, it's okay. No, it's cool. I'm just telling you that all the players would want to go to L.A. They would want to go to New York. They would want to do all these different things. But the way the league is structured, it has stopped that. And so now you have a very fair and balanced league. Bad for the player, good for the NFL. As soon as they start doing this, Jason, as soon as they start making these moves, I went out. And they start forcing their way out, it's going to change the dynamic of the way the NFL operates.
I agree. My rebuttal to that is this. You're mm-hmm. right. Well, I know you're coming out from an owner standpoint. So I got that. So,
yeah.
All right. My thing is the marketplace, right? When you think about the marketplace, the NFL, this is true that because of certain contract restrictions, especially with the draft, you know, players are stuck where they're stuck. That being said, let's imagine it got to where most deals were 2-year guaranteed deals or something like that. Fantasy world here.
Mm-hmm.
Fantasy world. I'm still, as a player, for the most part, going to make a decision on what team I go to that's the best for me. Meaning I'm a defensive end. I'm not as good as OC. You pay me a little bit less than OC, but it's close. I'm not going there. You're starting.
Yeah.
I can go to another team and play and start. And still play. So that's why I remember when Plaxico was before he went to New York, he said, when I was in Houston, he said Houston wanted him there. And he was like, that was Andre's team. I wasn't going there. You know, that kind of stuff happens. And the reason I say that is now the reason you will go to a team is based on how well the organization is run. When you talk about a healthy labor environment, right, OC? You talk about employment and opportunities, right? You're going to go, if you got 3 jobs, you're going to go to the one with the best perks, right?
Of course, as a player.
As a player, or just period.
I'm like talking about as an owner being able to maintain your star players, right, the main attraction.
So as an owner, if you know you can now bring that value as an owner, you say, hey, I can make my team like this and attract the best players. Maybe I pay Jay Bell a little less, but look at all these perks. Look at what environment I've created for him and others like him in this team in general. Now.
Short-term thinking, Jason.
Why is that short-term thinking if you're an owner who can bring that to the table?
Because there's such a thing called best practices, and you know exactly what best practices are.
Yes.
Once that precedent is set, right?
yes.
I mean, Seattle is an incredible organization, incredibly run organization.
Yeah, it is.
Once that precedent is set, and players are now able to force their way out of situations, who's to prevent that from happening to you?
But owners can force players out of situations when they're done with them.
That's why I said this has been incredible for the owners and terrible for the players. It's unfair. It's a very, very unfair situation. Always has been. Always has been. Let's not let these big contracts fool us. It has always been an unfair situation for the players. But oddly enough, this is what has kept the NFL bigger than all the other leagues combined. It's because they've restricted the movements and the other team, they can't do that. So you have the late in the NBA is like 3 or 4 teams who at the beginning of the season, you know, are going to win. Like you just know, like, oh, these guys are going to win. Baseball, the same thing. Soccer is the same thing. You look at in the Premier League out here, we had maybe Leicester do this maybe a couple of years ago. And this was like a shot in. It was ridiculous. Other than that, you know who's going to win every single year. And the NFL, you do not, because the stars are everywhere. And at any point in time, just one good draft.
Yeah.
You're at the top. Yeah. And they have restricted the player movement. So as an owner, as a league, you got to be like, I want these guys, but I cannot allow this to happen.
I totally understand from an organization standpoint. Why you have to be strict with your decisions, because like you said, once precedence is set, that's what it is. The draft, I believe, that is what it is. I don't think there needs to be, I'm not talking about change there. I think there should be some change, but change there. I'm just talking about free agent, lower players. But I will say this, you're right. We just
it'd be great for the players. Incredible for the players. That's what I would want. That's what we want.
Yeah.
From an ownership standpoint.
Right.
And the main thing is your quarterback position. You cannot have an unhealthy relationship with the quarterback. And it's because the way the rules are set up, because of how much you've invested in him and you want to keep him healthy and on the field, that if there is a disruption at that position, that is your quickest way to have a failure of a season. You cannot have an unhappy situation with your quarterback going into free agency. That's why they're all flexing right now.
Yep.
Like, are you going to go sign with a team? You're like, man, I don't know what's up with Russ. I don't know what's up with Deshaun and OC. And let's be honest, this isn't back in the day. I can ask both of them. Yo, I go on Instagram. Yo, what's the real? Should I come back? Should I sign? What's happening here? Man, you better look somewhere else. Like, that communication didn't happen before, OC.
It's crazy. They better be players. The players better keep flexing. They better keep their foot on the gas. But I'm telling you right now, the NFL owners, they better flex too. If they want to hold on to what they've held on to, they better put their foot in the ground right now. Be like,
But remember this: everybody in the NFL, for the most part, has a successful business somewhere else, right? They've created wealth somewhere else. That being said, doesn't matter how much you've done off the field, everybody's chasing that trophy.
Yep.
That is the ultimate look at what I've accomplished.
Mm-hmm.
And things change because of that. Practices change, approaches change. You said it the best. You like, Stephen Jones had to come in and say, hey, Jerry, man, you know, we're going to have to slow this down a little bit. Jerry wants a taste. He got three of those Super Bowls. He wants another one, and he's going to find it. He got a $200 million yacht. He don't have another Super Bowl. You always said it the best. You go, at some point, you got enough to take care of your needs. What else do you want?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
So,
Jason, most people who are like filthy rich, they don't think like that. Or else they wouldn't be that rich if they thought like that.
Well, I mean, they might think about that of their daily needs, but legacy is something different, and all that kind of stuff, and what you're trying to do there. Yes, you know, how many generations, and especially when it's a family business stuff. Yeah, I understand it's different philosophies when you're operating on that high level. I just didn't know you were going to take it there.
Yeah. speaking of people operating on a high level. There was a lot going on here. There's a lot going on here over the last couple of days, Jay. Ain't that right?
There's a lot going on. Somehow this podcast always seems to land on the right day.
Yeah. A lot going on, huh?
This is shaking up the world with Meghan and Harry. Before we get into this, I just want to say something before I really want you to I want you to know your thoughts. We make a joke all the time and we call you OC Winfrey. And it's because when you interview, you're very present. You're into the conversation. You're looking for the way it's going to turn. You prepare, but it's very natural. And I've seen this. I've watched you. I've used a lot of your techniques. You always make people feel a part of the conversation and comfortable. You put them in a very relaxed place. Before we go into this, I just want to give Oprah Winfrey some serious, serious due and credit. I mean, she's the greatest, right? But the way she conducts the interviews, anyone in the business, just study her. We can't be her, but just study her. Magnificent.
Yep.
The timing, the delivery, the responses. She's the best, man, in my opinion, in my humble opinion.
Yeah.
Anyways, shout out to Oprah Winfrey. I just witnessed greatness.
She's actively listening, and she wants the viewer to understand. She wants the person who's being interviewed, she gives them a chance to explain themselves, to really let it all out. And then she, you know, she asked the follow-up question. She's outstanding at it. There's no question about it.
No.
But things out here went crazy.
Yes.
Things went crazy because the royal family was under attack.
Yeah.
Made to look a certain way. Didn't really come across as looking good.
No.
Especially in this environment. And, you know, they've had an approach of really never responding to things, but not sure how they're going to handle this one, man, because this was tough. I'll say this. In regards to Meghan, Markle, and Harry, who I've met, you know, spent some time with Harry. Mm-hmm. Incredible person, man. I liked him. He's very humble, very down to earth. He had a good time. He's a great guy. Mm-hmm. I feel bad for him in a way because mm-hmm. I've seen what this has done to his relationship with his family. Mm-hmm. And it's never good. Like when you're arguing with pretty much everybody in your family, like he's been ostracized basically because of, you could say, his relationship. But I'll say this in regards to Meghan. She said something during the interview that I found to be fascinating. I found it to be very, very true when I looked at it from her perspective. Mm-hmm. She was like, you hear about the royal family, right? And you know, and this is like from an American standpoint or Canadian, you know, you hear about this royal family, Prince Charming, it's a fairy tale. But then you get in and then you realize that it's something completely different. And I agree because like when you're watching these things, when you're looking at the royal family from the outside, mm-hmm. you're like, oh my God, this is so cool. This is incredible. It's the royal family. It's, you know, Prince Charming is Cinderella. It's all that good stuff. It seems one way. And a good friend of mine would always tell me, like, OC, nothing is what it appears to be. That was his favorite thing. He would say that to me all the time. Like, OC, nothing is what it appears to be. And I think she found out that her idea of the royal family was completely different. This is their lives. And this is why a lot of times you see these royals, they marry within their own circle, right? This is their life. This lady, the queen, her bloodline has been ruling England for over 1,000 years. Like a lot of people can't even conceptualize 1,000 years, right? They are so steeped in tradition and they are so, you know, embedded within the society that everything, they see things one way and they're not changing for nobody, Jason. And you can come in with a different point of view. You can come in with American sensibilities and all the things you think are happening and right. And you might think you're going to get in and change all that, but this has been around for over 1,000 years and it's not going to change. It's not going to change for anybody. And this is what she found herself in. And she was like, wow, this isn't what I signed up for. You know, I thought it was Cinderella. I thought this was, you know, Prince Charming. And I can't do this. I gotta find my way out. And now the Prince Harry has to make a very, very difficult decision. He has to decide between his family and the woman he loves. And he has chosen the woman he loves. And it's sad in so many ways, man. It really is, because I hate to see that. I hate that for both of them. And I even hate that for the royal family. It's not good.
You think a lot of the procedures that are in place as far as the royal family, when you said something, it really triggered in my mind, survival. When you are in power that long, or you know, power, I'm saying it loosely, but when you've been at that level of status for that long, there is an understanding of what it takes to maintain order.
Yep.
And throughout history, you learn those things, right? You learn what needs to be done, what needs to be said, how you need to conduct yourself, your business, the family. And you said something else that's very true. I'm glad we are at this point in society as a whole, but there's two things right now there's a couple of things you don't want to be accused of, but two of them happened. And you have to respond because in our society right now, they are, the light is shining. And that is, you do not want to be called racist.
Yep.
And where we are with mental health and how the world, well, you know, the Western world has gotten involved with the subject, you always want to help someone in that situation, right? I mean, the awareness, it's been, the narrative has been discussed, it's been pushed. People are constantly coming out and trying to let others know that they're not alone. Two things that you do not want to be accused of. So that right there is tough. I, you know, how do you respond to that? Because you have to. You have to, or you don't. You know, or you don't from an institution standpoint. There's one thing I want to say, OC, that's very, I mean, I'm still diving into this, and you know, everybody's right in their opinion. What I'm fascinated by is people's opinion on this.
Mm-hmm.
And just diving into that and their resistance to change of their opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like people are coming from this in perceived kind of place they were before. I know that's kind of, I'm looking for the right words, OC. I feel like people's opinions have no agility right now.
Yeah.
I don't feel like people are, you know, there's a lot of love for the institution, a lot of love for the queen, as there should be. A lot of, you know, there's always been, you know, the media and its role and how they've treated Meghan. I mean, you know, it's just I feel like people are very stuck in their ways on how they think in this. Just by reading through the lines, and I'm still watching it and witnessing it happen.
You can look at it two ways, I think. Because my wife said something to me yesterday that I found it fascinating. She said that, she sees Meghan, you know, and she's like, okay, you know, she gets it, but she doesn't feel an extremely high level of sympathy for her. This is what she said. She's like, she feels her, you know, but she doesn't feel an extremely high level. Just like, you know, oh, the world is about that. She doesn't feel like that about what she's seen. And the reason is this. She said, I married you, OC, right? And I knew going in, your father was a king, right? Your father is of very high esteem, right? And you are also Nigerian, and I understood what that meant. Mm. Going in, I knew that going in. Mm-hmm. So there were certain things that after she won Miss Universe, there were certain things that people were approaching her to do. You know, like, you know, Sports Illustrated wanted to do the swimsuit issue. And, you know, a lot of these, you know, big companies wanted to do like lingerie. She was like, you know, I want to do these things, but I'm married to, or I'm with somebody, and I'm married to somebody who I know this isn't going to sit well with them. So I have to make a decision, right? Am I going to, you know, because, you know, she knows, if she asks me, I'll be like, go ahead, do whatever you want, do what makes you happy, because I've always been about that. But she knew that inside that my father would be like, man, I don't know about this, man, because my father was so proud of her. Like, my father loved her to death. He was always like, hey, lady, you know, sure. And she knew, she was like, if I did this, this isn't going to sit too well with this traditional standpoint. So I could either do me, mm-hmm. or I could just make this sacrifice and be like, nah. And she did that. She was like, okay, I'm going to do other things. I'm going to, you know, find another way of operating that we can all win. And she became a very successful business person. She's doing very well. She's in school now. And so she was like, you know, you have history. You know exactly what you're marrying into. You know what you're going into, right? You have to understand that you're not going to change these people. They've been like that for centuries. And I understand the world we're living in now, but they're not going to. So you have to make a decision.
There's no way that she didn't know what she was getting into.
Getting into.
Now, that doesn't make anything that negatively happen. No excuses. No. But you're not blind to what the institution is, how it works. Because if that love is what it is between them two, which I have no reason to think it isn't, that was disgust, OC.
Yep.
That was disgust. Yep. Hey, listen, I love you. This is how it is. This is how it's going to roll. It's all right. I love you enough. Let's do it. But like I said, things can change on a dime. And that brings me back to my point is I think people are so fixed in their ways of thinking with this that there's no mental agility. Just like I see the wrong, but I can also see the other side.
Yep.
And how you're trying to protect this institution at all costs because that's what you've done. That's what you do. And anybody that doesn't think that they wouldn't think like that, be honest with yourself. Just be honest with yourself, you know, to some extent. You know, I mean,
this has been a great podcast, man. I love this one. This got to be my favorite one. This has been cool.
it's a lot been going on. So we should revisit this when we have more information. I think everybody at home, just as you look at this, ask yourself why you are thinking the way you are and challenge your opinions. Try to understand or see it from the other side, just so you can be clear on and articulate to yourself exactly why you feel the way you do about it. You know, challenge your own thoughts. That's what we constantly do. It is not over. Trust us on that. And like I said before, the higher ups have said the word is follow, OC. Follow.
Follow.
Follow the podcast. Every 2 weeks, fortnightly. Is that how you say it?
Yeah, fortnightly. Yeah, fortnightly.
That's cool. Fortnightly was until Fortnite.
To the game. Yeah, fortnightly. Yeah, that's how they say it, man. Good job.
Yeah. So we are fortnightly. And for all those who don't know, it's OC's lunchtime right now. He is about to eat, aren't you?
I got to go eat. I got to go eat right now. Actually, I got to first go pick up contacts for TJ for my son, and then I'm going to eat.
TJ's going to contacts, huh?
Yeah, he's going to contacts.
Oh,
you know, he's all handsome. He's got to have it.
Man, he got good bone structure. What can you say?
Yeah, he does. Good bone structure.
Shout out to all the parents, kids going back to school. Congratulations to all those who were homeschooling and got it done. OC didn't do one thing in homeschooling.
Nope.
Jason, I've
done all my work. I did all my work many years ago. I'm done working.
OC said, I don't even see the boy. He just comes down, day's over.
That's it. Done.
All right. Well, we see you in 2 weeks with more topics to discuss. Jason and OC Podcast, we are out. Uprise all day. Holla at us.
Take mine for a joker. Just they keep a distance when I say make you come over. Gave you all my love. Now you say I'm bugging. Shawty leave me hanging. Body super banging. Every night I'm on it. Wake up, say my prayer. Show face, have no fear. Engine up and running. All these games I'm running.